Don't squeeze my thigh, please don't touch me there. I don't want to sleep with you, I just don't think it's right. Cause after all, the girl I love can't be here tonight.
Hello and welcome to Critical Mass, podcast of the Sydney Atheists. I'm Ian Wolfe. To find out more about the Sydney Atheists, or to get involved in any of our activities, check out sydneyatheists.org. On the show today, we have Alan. Dave.
Hello.
And Jason.
Hello, everybody.
And on this edition, we'll talk about the ethics of food, rape and religion, and Bart Simpson and the Scientologists. But first up, here's the news. We had a Sydney Atheist blood drive.
Yes, we did. We had, I think there was about 8 of us this time. And I think it was, there were only 3 of us that got rejected for having demon-filled blood. And yeah, it was quite good. I think.
Did we have any casualties this time?
Yes, we did. We had one casualty who chooses to remain nameless, and it was all good. Nobody seriously died, and the vampires got a fair amount of our blood. But next time, we're hoping to hit the magical 10, which is going to be April the 4th. I think the first Saturday in April. And yet so far we've saved the lives of, I think, 27 people, which is 3 people per donation.
And then you get to redeem these lives?
Well, yeah. Well, each life saved is another in the afterlife, is it not?
No, I think it means that we're now allowed to choose 27 people to face the banhammer from life, and we get to slaughter them.
Positive atheism. Sydney atheists.
You get life credits that you can exchange on the open market.
Well, we should be at least allowed to kind of fantasize about it, you know, to nominate and discuss.
It's like Mario's extra mushroom.
No, it's brilliant, though. It's a good job we don't talk about it.
All right, so as well as the blood drive, we celebrated Festivus, the festival for the rest of us.
Absolutely. It was in Centennial Park. We had a bit of a barbecue. We had the feats of strength.
Who won the feats of strength?
And who won, indeed?
Well, it wasn't Novenka, though she came quite close.
I'm in the dark here. Who did win? I wasn't there. I have no idea.
Okay,
our feats of strength.
No, this is probably a good idea. Jason, who is the strongest and manliest person in the Sydney Atheists? Who would have won the feats of strength?
Dr. K.
Dr. K was on holiday.
Yeah, she wasn't there.
Okay.
Obviously,
wasn't Dr. K, clearly.
But she'll be delighted to know that you think she's the manliest member. You know, we're really struggling with, you know, there's a huge demographic problem with
I'll give you a slight hint. The feat of strength for last year's Festivus was tug of war.
Who's the best at pulling?
Exactly.
Was it you, Dave the Happy Singer?
Aha, yeah.
Bwong. You win.
I think pulling means something different in Britain.
It has more positive connotations.
Very positive connotations. Yes, I won because I cheated the best.
And how do you cheat at tug of war?
Well, it was a rounds based system, and we somehow had some odd numbers when we should have had even numbers. So one loser was allowed to jump back into another round, and I did it.
Are you saying you lost at one point?
There was a moment, although it was a strict knockout competition, I managed to lose a round and still win the competition.
If you win the competition, you never really lost.
I just lost the game. It was okay. Good fun. No, I'm quite proud to be the strongest member of Sydney Atheists. I'd like to thank my mother and Charles Darwin for all the strength that they've brought me over the years, and I'd like to thank, you know, all the Sydney Atheists for their support. And
so you're not only the voice of reason, you're also Mr. Buff of the Sydney Atheists.
I am the strongest Sydney Atheist. I'm the voice of reason, according to APC Magazine. And apparently the world's hottest skeptic as well, according to Kylie Sturgis.
Who?
From the she's on some other podcast.
Ah. Mm. Okay. And the other thing that, of course, happened at Festivus was it rained in Centennial Park, but not on us.
Festivus miracle.
Yes.
That was quite odd.
It could have just been really bad aim on the part of a deity.
A mistake.
Yeah. Cross-eyed Jesus fails again.
He's getting old.
Ancient of days.
I'd like to see how good you are at controlling meteorology when you're 2,000 years old.
So is this evidence for the fact that optometrists don't get into heaven?
I don't know.
And didn't we talk about Festivus at the last podcast?
No, we said that Festivus was coming up.
It was the Festivus preview on the last podcast.
Yeah. It was really good.
So it lived up to expectations.
Yeah, we know how to party.
Yes, and to see such an educational movie, a well made movie we watched afterwards.
Yeah, which was
something about storytelling, the bedtime story or something. What was it called?
Bedtime stories with like Ben Stiller.
That's the horror. That's the horror.
Yeah,
we watched.
Yes. We went to the pictures afterwards. Yeah, we went to see the bedtime pictures. Stories
to really, see.
It was an Adam Sandler movie.
No, but that wasn't who we went to see, was it? Who was it that Tiffany wanted to see?
Oh,
she wanted to see
Russell. What's his
Russell
name?
Brand.
Russell Brand just got sacked off the BBC for being a. Are you allowed to say cock on Critical Mass?
He is a rooster.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so we went to see Bedtime Story. Bedtime Stories. It was terrible.
It was a Disney
movie.
Did we
do movie reviews? We did Expelled last month.
We did. Yes.
Don't see Bedtime Stories. It's got loads of woo-woo in there. But the moral of the story is you can do it yourself. You don't need a magic spell.
Yeah. And the moral of the story is you can steal stuff, you can destroy stuff, but as long as you're doing it for a reason that Walt Disney thinks is good, there'll be no repercussions.
Yes, and the reason is pulling a hot lass.
Yes. There's a hot girl at the end, and of course, no kissing is allowed to be seen on screen during a Walt Disney movie. You'll see the back of their heads, but you won't see the faces or the lips.
I think you'll find that in Lady and the Tramp, there's a very famous kissing scene.
But that was before.
Involving a bowl of meatballs.
That's been redacted.
What?
They've censored
They don't do that anymore. They don't do that anymore.
Well, you don't mean that they've edited movies. Lady and the Tramp and gotten rid of the dog kissing scene?
Wouldn't surprise me, but I'm kidding.
You're destroying my childhood here.
We're also not reviewing anything remotely related to atheism at this point.
This is true. All right, well, we could go on.
So a random social event that we went to afterwards wasn't actually any good.
We could go on to our little expedition to observe the unusual tribe of Toongabi Anglican Church.
Shall I tell this one?
You can well, we can all feel like we were all there.
We're all there, so we all have the story.
Except for Alan.
Alan wasn't there.
No.
You're going to have to be quiet.
I was knee-deep in muck. Oh,
goodness me.
So were we.
Copyright, plain song.
It was...
Ooh. Look them up.
It was fabulous. I'm subscribed to Toongabi Anglican's blog. I'm subscribed to a few local church blogs because I like to see what they're up to. And I know they're all avid listeners of the Critical Mass podcast.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Anglicans. And they had a series of sermons on tough questions for Christians. And I kind of had the slight suspicion that the questions might not be quite as tough as they could be. And one of them was memorably, why do good people go to hell? And we downloaded the podcast, had a listen to that in the car. And then the third and final one in the series of sermons was, does God exist? We had quite a lovely time. We went out. We didn't announce ourselves as atheists. We just went in, sat at the back, and they performed the traditional greeting ceremony when you're meeting nervous strangers, which is to drag them into the centre of the room, put a name badge on them, and make them sing in public.
Songs that they've never seen before.
Songs that they've never seen before, but they had...
songs with really bad bass lines, too.
Oh,
just really... very, very root note, horrible doom, 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 doom,
yeah.
Doom, doom, doom. Oh,
Well, the thing is, they had a band.
You weren't a fan of the bass player.
I was not a fan of the bass player, frankly.
They had a band out the front. I mean, let's paint the picture here. This wasn't a church with stained glass windows or ornate architecture. It was a big air-conditioned barn type of a place. And the one mind-altering thing they had, in addition to a live band to prove that they're hip with the young folk, was a big screen, which is where the lyrics to the songs were, which all eyes are automatically riveted to the screen, and you just read everything that comes up. And we noticed that all the songs had a copyright notice down the bottom, very prominently for Plainsong, which I'm guessing might be connected to Hillsong, but I don't know.
Plainsong.
Yeah.
You did just phrase that as a question, though, didn't you?
Yeah, I don't know.
Are they connected to Hillsong?
I don't know. I haven't looked it up.
Allegedly, they may be connected to Hillsong.
Or it may just be the name of, you know, church songs, Plainsong, and they've just used that as a copyright. Who knows?
It could just be a coincidence that two different companies involved in the singing of songs have got the name Song.
Who knows? It
could be.
But.
Yes.
Not to make a words, song and dance about it.
The words were really strange. I mean, if you paid attention to any of the rubbish going up on the screen, there was stuff about becoming a living sacrifice. Like, everybody in the room should aspire to being a living sacrifice.
Now, Ian, you do have a bit of a bee in your bonnet over the sacrifice word, don't you? Would you like to expand upon that?
Well, yes, I mean, to continue on, we sat through all the services, all the singing and the prayers, up to the point where they went on to the talk about, does God exist? Which, of course, wasn't actually answered.
Yeah, it started off, the leader of the service started with a gentle prayer, and interestingly said there are four classical arguments for the existence of God, and he briefly covered them. They were ontological, cosmological, teleological, and the moral law argument, which anybody who cares about this already knows what they are. Anybody who doesn't care, you're not missing much. And he quite rightly says that, you know, depending on the assumptions you make, you know, they can quite easily be dismantled. So they kind of skipped over that and moved on to introducing our feature act, which was Associate Minister Donnie Kwan, who started with it was wonderful. I mean, he started with a fabulous joke, which will go down in history for at least four people. It started with a joke, and the joke was, I don't know, should we do this as a role play? Jason, would you care to be the atheist?
I'll be the evil baby eating atheist. Yeah.
Okay, and I'll be the Christian, and I think I'll do this just for fun in the voice of my favorite apologist, John Lennox, because I've not done any Lennox for ages.
This will be such fun. Okay, so we're sitting down to lunch. So, John, you're a Christian, right?
Yes, I am. So I am.
So you believe in God?
Yes, I do.
How do you know that God exists? Can you see him?
No, I can't see God.
Can you smell him?
No, I can't smell God.
Then how do you know God exists?
Well, let me put this to you, Richard. Can you see your brain?
No.
Can you?
Right now?
Can you smell your brain?
And that's pretty much the moment when the lot of us just Donnie didn't do it with the hilarious John Lennox impression or any of the other little embellishments we did. It was just a terrible joke. And the point, I mean, it was a joke, but the point is, you taking a bad argument and turning it into a bad joke does neither apologetics nor comedy any service whatsoever. The fact that you and we christened this the argument from the ability to smell one's own brain. He went on. He shouted some Nietzsche at us. He quoted the start of Psalm 14, which is very famous to us atheists. The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. Alan, what do you normally say when they tell us that?
The wise man shouts it from the rooftop.
Yes. I tend to refer them to Matthew 5:22, which says that if you say, you fool, you are surely in danger of the fires of hell. Which means they're not allowed to use that. And of course, then they say, but you've got to take it in context. It's very sophisticated.
I've got to say, though, in as far as the fool says in his heart there is no God, I kind of go along with that, because if you say that you can prove the non-existence of the God, then you've got some evidence that the rest of us don't actually have.
I would disagree.
I would disagree with that, too. Sorry. Doesn't work that way at all. You have to define what God is, and as soon as you define what God is, I can disprove that definition. It's as easy as that.
Okay, but in the quote, he doesn't.
In what quote?
That one. Fool says in his heart, there is no God.
Well, it's a
well, they're talking. It's in. You got to take it in context. It's complex.
You can't take the Bible in context.
The context. The context is the God of the Bible, and that's easy to disprove.
Go on, do it.
Well, for example, there's this church called St. Barnabas that burned down.
But why do churches have lightning conductors? I've never understood. Yeah, it was wonderful. And then he went on, God who gives clues in creation. Well, that's just the teleological argument again.
Again, yeah. After dismissing the arguments, he went on to use them. Like, not only do you use the teleological argument in depth, that all of the reality we see is creation and therefore reflects creation, and therefore because it is creation, it is created, and therefore it's back in a circle. But he also went back to the moral law argument, like in detail, to say that all, because there is God, there is morals, and anyway, go on to the rest
well,
of it.
The next one was the God who speaks to us, and I noticed in the question at the beginning, the atheist and Christian didn't mention the inability to hear God, because he tells us very soon that God speaks to us.
And this tells you that this is a very carefully constructed bit of deception, because there's no ordinary conversation where an atheist would use smell instead of hearing after using, can you see God, can you hear him? He wouldn't go to smell. Well, the only reason to put that is so that you can skip the hearing part.
Well, there was no reason for an atheist to use that, but now we've heard it.
We're not going to let go.
Use it all the time.
So, Dave, what did he say about hearing God?
I don't know. I mean, I mentioned this to him afterwards. I said, you know, a personal revelation would probably be the best way of convincing me that he was right. And the best thing you can do for me is to pray and pray and pray that I get the revelation he's had. But the first thing I would do if I started hearing voices would be I'd go to the doctor. Well, at first I'd probably ring up a friend and say, hey, guess what? I just heard this voice. It's so funny. And then they'd probably, I hope you guys would tell me to go and see a doctor.
That's the horrifying thing.
He speaks to us through the Bible.
But that's the thing. That's the reason they didn't mention, the atheist didn't ask, can you hear God? Because the question would have to be, no, I don't hear God. Because if you talk to any of the people I spoke, the guy I spoke to, and I think the people you spoke to, none of them have had a personal experience of hearing God. None of them have had a supernatural experience.
Not an auditory
and this
one.
Shocks me, because I would have thought that would be the thing that would be keeping you in your faith, is that you've had a direct confrontation. And instead, all they have is, well, I don't hear him directly, but I just have this feeling that I'm guided when I do what I want to do, and or what I feel is right. And I hear him through the Bible, and I hear him through the birdsong. And they're doing all this interpretation of stuff that's not a voice of God at all. Mm. And they don't want to say, answer the question, can you hear him? Because the answer has to be no, and they don't want that answer. Because they want to say, I hear him. Well, no, you don't.
I also think there's a little bit of kind of mutual peer pressure that nobody asks each other if they've actually heard it. They watch everybody else professing to have a personal experience, and it's so easy to do. And the music is fab if you like bad music. And, you know, when you're in there and you're in that community, it's easy, because I've done it. You know, I was a Christian and I professed to believe this stuff, but really, I mean, the actual, any manifestation that wasn't just kind of imaginary, reinforced by the community, it didn't exist.
Well, it's not just reinforced by the community, it's guided by the minister. Part of the sermon we heard used a little bit of a form of hypnosis called neurolinguistic programming, where instead of putting you in a trance, like an ordinary church would do with their stained glass windows and their organ music and their incense, none of which they had at Toongabby Anglican, they used the right sort of language. So they did, for example, they said, look, can you remember when you last felt deeply in love, when you heard your loved one say to you, I love you? And as you remember how that feels, imagine what it's like if God, the creator of the universe, said, I love you, and how you would feel. So he's got you to remember and go back into feeling loved. He's got you to remember feeling what it's like to hear someone say, I love you. And then he's got you to imagine that connection to your imaginary friend and feel this connection to someone who's not there. And that's how they renew this relationship, this personal relationship to someone who's not there, is by this little bit of hypnosis in the sermons.
I just had a little creepy shiver up my spine.
Did I give you some faith?
Ew!
Isn't that horrible? I mean, that's so manipulative, and it's invasive and deceptive.
He then went on to tell us about Cluedo.
The argument from Cluedo, because he can't possibly imagine how would you kill someone with a candlestick.
Oh, that was wonderful. I mean, he started off by telling us that Cluedo was his favourite murder mystery board game. And then he says, how do you kill somebody with a candlestick? To which, I don't know, I think there were five people in the room who said, it's a blunt instrument, you tool. Have you got no imagination?
The argument from blunt instrument.
Yeah, it's a blunt instrument. I mean, how do you kill... Easy, you set fire to the house with it. Hit them over the head really hard.
You suspend a weight above their head with a piece of string, then you use the candlestick to slowly burn through the string.
Oh, but this is this indirect thing
like
again,
like a Rube
right?
Goldberg kind of thing.
Gold. So the idea is that God can't directly talk to you because he's a phasic, right? He can't.
He's a what?
He's a phasic. He can't actually speak, right? Oh. The argument from a phasic. He can't speak directly. He's got to speak indirectly. So you can't just put up a big neon sign saying, here I am, or, you know, I'm here, dance around, ha la la. No, he's got to do indirect stuff. And Cluedo means you've got to find these hidden clues and put them together to point to God, because he's not powerful enough or intelligent enough to do it directly. He can't just say, here's the facts.
Oh, it can, but
like the Bible.
Chooses not to.
Because
he's too busy moving in mysterious ways. Oh, can we wrap this up? Because I'm getting really bored. I want to laugh at him.
Okay, press pause.
Press pause. I'm paused.
Oh, is he gone?
He's gone.
He's gone.
He's gone. He's gone. Right.
Okay, so
Conradi.
So that Alan,
right? That Alan. Yeah. Right, he's off now to get his little self, his super secret cell phone out, and they're like, "They've got you, Donnie."
Yeah. So of course they went on. They went on to their various arguments for the existence of God through Cluedo, which again is once again teleological, that there's evidence in creation of creator and all that sort of rubbish. And then they went on to the stupid thing. Did you have a bit about
the God who became...
Oh, the God who became flesh.
Hmm.
Went on to the flesh argument.
The man who would became... The God who became flesh. I don't know, the God who speaks with, by the way, that's just appeals to scripture.
Yes. Yeah. Do you remember what part they had the interactive bit where you talk to your neighbour about something? What was the question they asked us to ask?
That was after the very last question. In
oh, okay. So
was
we'll
that
get
the
to
worksheet? It was after that.
Oh, should we get to it then?
We should get to that.
All right. Well, I can't find my sheet. I've got to write up my entry.
Stop interrupting, Ian. Goodness me.
This was a great question. A wonderful question. Dun, dun, dun. Do you believe in this God that exists?
Not does God exist, but do you believe in the God that exists?
It's like push polling.
I mean, quite apart from being very bad grammar and syntax, I'm so angry. Ugh.
It's like push polling. It's like, are you going to vote for that nice Christian man John McCain, or are you going to vote for the evil Obama terrorist?
it's worse than that. Push-poll. It's deliberately. It's playing with language, be deliberately deceptive. It's the sort of question you ask when you don't want to ask the question you said was the name of the sermon, does God exist? You don't want to ask that question because you're afraid of the answer. So instead of asking the question, you sort of squirrel the question into, do you believe in the God who exists? Because that part's not in question, just whether you believe in him or not is in question.
The question contains the answer to the entire presentation. Do
you trust God that exists?
This God who exists, well, obviously we've already answered the whole thing, but do you believe in him?
Yeah. Do you trust him?
The question is not, are you now satisfactorily persuaded that God exists and that you know what a God is and what it might mean for this God?
And there was no actual discussion of the properties of said God.
Interesting, the Texas guys did this really well. They did a whole TV show on it on the Atheist Experience, which was, it's a two-word sentence, God exists, and neither word gets properly defined. You need to say what a God is, not what a God does. We know God created the world, but what is a God? You know,
yes.
How does it manifest?
Yes.
And what then would it mean for that God to actually exist? If it's undetectable by science, then in what sense can it
be
said to exist?
If it can't be smelled.
And if you're going to say God exists, you need to explain those two words. And they did it really well. Have you seen that episode?
Well, listen to it, yes.
Yeah.
No,
seen that episode of...
The Atheist Experience.
The Atheist Experience. It's the Austin guys
Atheist
TV show.
Of Austin.
I need to catch up with that.
They're kind of internet friends of ours, aren't they?
They are. Oh. Real life.
Name drop. Matt Dillahunty.
Martin Wagner.
Russell Wayne Glasser.
So we got on to, from the whole not engaging with the question at all of whether or not God exists, and not really engaging with the audience at all. There's no chance for you to talk back to the pastor or the guy giving the sermon or any of this stuff to ask questions. The tough questions not asked. We then went on to the prayers, didn't we? Is that right?
Oh, yeah, that was wonderful.
And it was at the top of their list, the person they care most about, that they want God to intercede, to help the most. Who else but Richard Dawkins?
Oh. Yeah, it was your friend the bass player again, wasn't it, Jason?
My good friend the bass player who ran away really fast after he realized that.
This was the glorious, glorious thing of this meeting is we went in just as visitors. We didn't sort of say anything until after the meeting. And when they went into their prayer, they didn't just go after Richard Dawkins, but all those arrogant atheists. They sort of went on to the argument of atheism from Pol Pot to Kim Jong-il and Mao Zedong and how we mow down people in shopping centres with machine guns, because that's that's inevitably where atheism leads. You know where it goes, folks. And so after this big, big, nasty prayer against atheists and visiting God to fix them, of course, and maybe us sinners, because we're sinners as well in the Anglicans, then they came around to say hello to the visitors and ask what we thought, and we told them.
The other common thing was this accusation that atheists have somehow got a superior attitude or an arrogant attitude for saying that God doesn't exist. What is more arrogant? Saying that the case has not yet been satisfactorily made for the existence of this thing you call a God, or claiming that a Palestinian zombie rabbi created the Andromeda Galaxy and you think you're in a personal relationship with this creator of the universe, and we're the one with the superior turn. Oh, and because of that, gay people aren't allowed to get married, we're not allowed to do stem cell research, we're not allowed to give condoms to to people in Africa, you know, we'd rather, you know, AIDS is bad but condoms are worse,
and it's okay to brainwash children.
Oh yeah, that's fine. And we did have a little debate about the brainwashing of kids with Reverend Donnie.
I chatted actually with the children's pastor.
Bless her. She was very sweet, wasn't she,
who claimed to me directly that, isn't it amazing that the scriptures line up so well with each other? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
Oh, she walks into your trap
it's
there.
It's really, really not the right thing to do when you've got
a Bible.
With a Bible in his bag with post-it notes at the inconsistencies. This is not a good thing. So immediately I whipped out my Bible and went to Matthew chapter 28 and John chapter 20, which concern the discovery of the empty tomb. And if you check this for yourselves, listeners, this is an interactive segment. take note, how many women turned up? And was the stone already moved? And were there any angels there? And you'll find that there are inconsistencies across all four Gospels.
Of course, she was surprised to have this demonstrated, like, instantly by an atheist, because atheists can't possibly read a book, can they?
Certainly not.
Especially
too
not,
busy
especially,
babies.
Especially not a big, long book.
You know what's amazing?
Shooting up shopping centres. Too busy doing that.
That was brilliant. That was wonderful. Yeah, he said, in his sermon that, you know, if a mass murderer goes out and shoots up a market, that atheists have got no reason to feel any kind of moral outrage at this.
Because all morals come from God, and without God there are no morals.
This sermon
leads.
This sermon can be downloaded, by the way. It's a Toon Gabby Anglican's website. Download it now before it goes. And if you at some later date can't find this, then get in touch with us, because we'll be archiving this. it was fabulous. Yeah, and I spoke to him afterwards and I said, so what are you saying? If you weren't a Christian, you'd have no reason to condemn a mass murderer. And he says, no, that's not what I'm saying at all. That's not what I'm saying. Well,
exactly
what you were saying, Reverend Donnie.
Now, Samson committed mass murder in the Bible because God had a murder-suicide pact with him. I don't remember that being a central theme of the God delusion.
Old Testament, mate, doesn't matter. They've got a new covenant. Old Testament.
You cut out 80% of the book for the...
Old Testament only matters when you're stopping people having sex with people of the same sex. That's the only time the Old Testament...
There's also Deuteronomy.
Don't steal. Oh, yeah, don't steal and don't kill.
Don't do magic.
The two commandments.
The occult.
Don't do magic. Unless you're at a wedding and all the wine's run out.
Or unless you're invoking an invisible helper.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were talking about science. Oh, it's great. We were talking about cosmology afterwards, and I was like, how old do you think the Earth is? And Donnie says, I think it's somewhere in the region between the thousands and the millions, conveniently including, 6,000 years old within that range. Not that I'm accusing you of being a young Earth creationist. I'm accusing you of being
the billions.
Utterly, utterly ignorant. And, you know,
even if the world is, in his worldview, a million years old, he is a young Earth creationist.
Yeah, because the Earth is, you know, 4.5 billion years. The universe is 13.7 billion.
At least.
Yeah.
So I had a chat with one of the chaps afterwards, who actually used the, but evolution is only a theory, surely. which was quite excellent, because I could immediately go, yeah, you don't understand what the word theory means, do you? And he went, oh, well, yeah, but what did he say? It was, but there is a controversy, right? And I was able to go, yes, there's a political and a religious controversy. There is no scientific controversy. And then he carried on going and said, but there are scientists who question evolution. And I went, yeah, there's about two.
Yes.
And then he said, well, obviously you're biased, and kind of went off the track.
Your facts are biased.
Yes, so is reality. No, the thing with the young Earth...
Oh, yes, long you remember.
Yeah, the age of the universe. And we nailed him down on this, and he was like, but, well, why are you bothered? Why do you care? Why are people bothering wasting the time finding out the age of the Earth? I mean, people are starving in Africa. And I turned around to him and I says, what do you think we should be doing? Praying for them? And he... Oh, dear, the poor look on his face. Bless him.
Well, I had a chat with a nice guy who obviously hadn't thought very much about this. He hadn't been challenged before. Hadn't met someone who'd thought about things. So I went through my standard line, apparently, with Christians in the last year or so, is to ask them about the baby killing. Because that's one of the things they accuse, of course, atheists of, you know, eating babies, all that sort of stuff. So we've got... the problem is, in the Old Testament, you have killing of the firstborn of the Egyptians, which is killing babies. Now, at the time, they weren't too worried about it, the Old Testament people, because it's the enemies of Israel that's smiting, and that's how it all used to be. The New Testament people last century would have got into original sin, but that doesn't sit too well with modern people, the idea that you can condemn an innocent baby for sins that happened 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, whatever years ago, 4,004 BC, whenever it's supposed to be. That's just silly. So when you put to a modern Christian, even a fundamentalist, that killing babies, isn't that evil? They have trouble with saying, no, oh, that's Old Testament. You say, well, don't you believe that this broken world that you believe is broken because man has exercised the free will that he was given to exercise and dared to use it is going to be destroyed in fire and earthquake and in horror? And what's going to happen to the babies? Well, they're all going to die horribly. That's more baby killing. So is that really a God you want to worship? This evil baby killer. And yes, he hadn't thought about that one before. I also did, if you'd believe, again, definition of what is a god. Well, just because he's, if you accept that we were created by some intelligent personhood, are they human? Are they not human? If you go into the whole non-human argument, well, if an alien in a flying saucer came along and said, actually, we created the Earth, we started you off. We own you. You're going to do what we say from now on, because creation means we have authority over you, because that's how it works. Would we sit still for that? Would we agree? And it's, oh, well, you know, if we had a personal relationship with this alien. And I thought, personal relationship with the alien who wants you to obey him in all things unquestioningly. He isn't... what? So you'd have to think about that one, but he hadn't thought about it before, and it might be a case. And I tried a couple of scenarios. And then, of course, there's the whole point of the Messiah, right? The whole of Christianity and the New Testament is based on the fact that it's fulfilling the prophecy of the Messiah in the end of the Old Testament. And the problem is it doesn't fulfill the prophecy. The prophecy said that when the Messiah comes, the enemies of Israel will all be smited. They will all be brought down and stopped harming Israel, and there shall be peace for 1,000 years. This did not happen 2,000 years ago. They'd been persecuted for the last 2,000 years.
So he wasn't the Messiah.
He wasn't even
a
naughty...
He was a mess, all right, but not the Messiah.
Not a naughty boy. And, of course, the Messiah has a name, right? It's the prophet Elijah that's supposed to be coming back as the Messiah to bring about the end of the enemies of Israel and peace for 1,000 years, which is why at Passover... Jews put out a glass of wine and leave the door open so that the prophet Elijah, this year, maybe he'll come and drink some of the wine, and maybe...
Elijah or Santa Claus?
His most famous saying was, ho, ho, ho.
Those thieving Christian bastards. Oh, dear. Yeah, oh, dear. Okay, so I would just like to ask you guys a question, though. That the this thing about like going out and engaging with them, and I mean, obviously, I think it would be a terrible thing to disturb anybody's observance or to make them feel uncomfortable in their own church, and which I certainly wasn't there to harass or upset. And they seemed, you know, surprised, but not upset to see us.
They didn't object.
No. And I think it was really important because there were so many misconceptions about atheists and atheism. And I think actually seeing a real life one, and I think it's good for us as well because we can demonize these people at a distance and we can look at their Bible and see how terrible it is. And it is terrible. If the theists are listening, it is an awful book. Read it. The more people read the Bible, the fewer Christians there'll be. But, you know, these are actually really sweet, lovely people. And, you know, there wasn't a single one there that I wouldn't have had a wonderful time having a glass of beer with and having a long, long chat with. I think you might have burned some bridges on your blog since then, James.
Just possibly I might have burnt a bridge or two. I should note...
bass player can't come for a beer.
No, he certainly can't come for a beer. We have had some post-visit engagement across the blogs. We have several blogs here. Dave blogs, I blog.
And I hadn't written mine yet.
And we have had some responses from the Toon Gabby Anglicans, and they have expanded on and kind of abrogated some of the statements that we have described them as saying, and there's a debate going on, but essentially I've sort of scorched the earth around one of them. David, hi, how are you? So yes, if you'd like to read that blog, that one's at mycolleaguesareidiots.com. Dave the Happy Singer will have a blog up at davethehappysinger.com. And also these will all be linked from sydneyatheists.org.
And I'll have mine up at hereswhy.tk.
Has Rachel blogged on this?
I don't think so. I think she was planning to, though.
Yeah, well, maybe she can link to ours.
Yeah.
Those links will be fine.
I think we might satiate all of the available content, though, over the four blogs.
But we all had very different experiences, because although we had all the sermon and the prayers in common, we all spoke to different people. So we all had a different experience talking to all these people. I mean, I had a very friendly conversation, and I seemed to be engaging with someone who was really thinking about these things, possibly for the first time, and who admitted he hadn't had any personal supernatural experiences, and he wanted to talk more, and he gave me his email address so we could talk more about this stuff. Possibly they might come along to a Sydney Atheist meetup at some point, just to see what a group of atheists are like when they're not out mowing down people at shopping centres.
And eating babies.
Yes. Something like that.
Anglican pastor, where have your brains gone? They're not in your cranium, no. You know you can't see them, you can't even smell. This must be a crushing blow. Anglican, Anglican pastor, you've got it all wrong. Your fraudulent book, the way that you think it's reality guide. Your logic's a shambles, your fallacious rambles, your logicless homilies. What's in the songbook? No, that's the wrong book. Get up from off your knees. Anglican, Anglican pastor, you got it all wrong. The fraudulent book, the way that you think it's biology guide. Archdeacon's a failure, the atheist's failure with logical argument. Religion impedes you, theology feeds you lies about firmament. Anglican, Anglican pastor, you've got it all wrong. Your fraudulent book, the way that you think it's morality guide. Anglican pastor. brain's gone, they're not in your cranium, so where have they gone now? Anglican.
All right, so as well, we had a meetup this month at, what was the new pub?
The new pub is called the Clarendon, I believe.
At the Clarendon in Surrey Hills.
Used to be called the O-Bar on Devonshire Street.
Devonshire Street, okay.
So what rating does it get on your pub review website?
I wouldn't know. I have not updated that website for some time. It used to be a really good pub. I haven't been since the refurbishment.
It was all right. It suited our needs perhaps a little bit better than the Royal Albert, except there was a pole.
No, well, it had a few things wrong. I mean, it had a problem.
It was, what, like a Polish man or
Pope John Paul?
A Festivus pole?
It had a column in the middle of the... Yeah, it had a weight-bearing column in the middle of the room that blocked your view of the people talking, which is not so good. And they didn't have any proper tables and chairs for you to eat dinner on, which were, they had them, but they wouldn't let us use them. Which was annoying. What? Yeah, they have a whole dining section to the right, but we were on the bar area to the left, and as a result, there were only those little tiny sort of ankle-level tables.
Sounds like buffoonery to me.
Yes, yes. The one thing they do have is a screen, but anyway, I'm not a big fan of the place. But what we had, it was talk. The talk was supposed to be about sex and atheism. That was the advertised topic.
Sex and religion.
Sex and religion.
Because
sorry.
Sex and so, atheism could just go on.
Well, this
and
is true. Okay, so talk about sex and religion. So was sex and religion actually what was discussed?
Well, the first guy that got up and spoke was from the No to Pope Coalition, I believe. And he did a bit about sex and religion. And it was mostly about the Pope's visit and what the No to Pope Coalition actually did and these sort of things. And I think he was from one of the queer groups. And that was about all the sex and religion that we got.
Okay, and so it's
I
not...
I think you came in after that point.
I was at least 5 minutes late, yes.
Yes, and I think the first part only went for about 10 minutes maximum. And then we got on to socialism.
Right, because that's part of the topic that we thought we'd be getting when we asked these people to come along. Yeah, and then, of course, in discussing socialism, he got then onto the... great topic that everyone there really didn't want to hear about.
Can I guess? Was it Gaza?
Gaza.
Was it?
It was Gaza.
Oh, that was a surprise.
And of course, being from one of the organized socialist groups, he has the standard dogmatic view of Gaza that they all have, regardless of whatever will happen there.
It's the same. It was the same. No to Pope. It was suddenly all about left of center politics and the Middle East conflict, and it was the same at the DLC's protest about the internet. They hijacked that. And it's them and the Raelians. The Raelians come along with the "Love Comes from Aliens" thing, and they come along, and I don't think they're doing either of their pet causes any particular favors by hijacking these things.
Well, it's a big mistake to come along to a group of atheists and start spouting off with facts that aren't true, because we're going to be picking them up pretty quickly, and usually some people in the room will have some interest or knowledge of the subject area, and it's going, well, no. Oh, no. And, like, several of us will go, well, hey.
Well, there were two people that were born in Israel that took umbrage to some of the stuff that was said.
Well, not just people born in Israel. Anyone who's studied the subject would take a bit of umbrage at the view.
But he did use the argument, well, I've been there. And then they go, well, we were born there. You know, so that kind of shot him down. But
yeah, yeah. It's sort of the Israelis are atheist monsters and the Palestinians are good religious folk, which is not the sort of... That's basically what it comes down to, that they do no wrong, or rather they do... The wrong they do is they're entitled to do.
I don't want an answer on
and
this.
And on it goes and on it goes.
I really
and
don't give a toss
no,
either
no,
way.
No, it's not I've never... something like that. It's just a topic that doesn't need to be brought up unless that's what you're going to see. Yeah. If you want to discuss it, then you go to that talk.
I've never seen the connection between socialism and the Israel-Gaza conflict. It's like it's just like somebody's gone out shopping and they've gone, okay, I'm going to have some tomato sauce and an apple, and they're going to make a meal out of that. I've never understood the connection. I don't give a toss what the connection is. I don't want to hear what the connection is.
There you go.
Because yeah, so I'm a closed-minded atheist.
Our most recent meetup was...
I'm calling time out on Gaza Talk from now on. No more. Stop.
There you go.
He was great when he played for Newcastle, though, wasn't he?
So, yes, so go and talk about Gaza at your Gaza discussion groups, but don't bait and switch. Yep. Okay, so in addition, we also had, most recently, the Atheist Social Lounge.
Which is always a good time. Everybody has a few drinks and, you know, a bit of a conversation.
Yes, yes, we have a few drinks and some conversation.
And some more drinks.
And some more drinks, yeah.
And some more conversation.
Well, the more you drink, the less conversation there is, and the more bowels are spurted.
And, Alan, this could lead us into your chosen subject, in fact.
Because this was a topic we discussed.
Because we came on to food ethics.
We did.
If a tree falls in the forest, do other trees hear the screams?
And do turtles get squashed?
And is it more acceptable to eat a fetus than a chicken?
What is the ethics of food?
Okay. Well, basically, getting into our first topic. Recently...
Oh, we've not even started yet.
Not really.
Sorry, listeners.
Well, how long do you want to segue for?
No, it's fine.
We'll edit that bit out. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, basically, Rachel and I have gone from being vegetarian to being vegan recently.
Breatharian next.
Breatharian next. Well, no, freegan on the way to breatharian. But, so, you know, we've been vegan for, vegetarian for about, 2 years, I think. And that was mostly based on emotional arguments. We didn't like to eat animals. We didn't like to think about eating animals. And we thought, oh, well, we just won't. So we didn't have very good reasons for it for about a year and a half. And then recently we've actually been looking into it and trying to figure out, well, is there a decent argument or are we just doing this for our personal reasons? And of course, you know, whatever a person chooses to do is fine. But we want to actually be able to stand up and say, well, this is why we're doing it, and this is why we think that we're doing a good thing by doing it. So, looking into it, Rachel got me for Christmas Peter Singer's The Ethics of What We Eat. So, that's really started my detailed approach to exactly what the food is that I'm consuming, and what are all of the different positions on all the different foods that are there. And the first thing that was to go was milk, you know, went on to the soy milk, which wasn't a terrifically difficult thing to do. You know, we only have milk in coffees, so it wasn't a huge step. We don't really eat many eggs, so that wasn't a hard one to drop. So it was basically just eliminating cheese from our diet. And that's been somewhat harder because as vegetarians, we basically ate cheese with a little bit of salad in it at some time.
Cheese with a little bit of salad in it.
Well,
hollowed out cheese.
Pretty much. Leaf in.
So it was most of your protein was from cheese.
In Switzerland, you don't need to hollow it out. It comes pre-hollowed.
I wouldn't say that most
you
of our
protein... just need to get cherry tomatoes and poke them in.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that most of our protein was from cheese because we eat a lot of tofu. We eat a lot of the vegetable proteins and things like that. I've missed some absolutely humorous thing.
It's okay. We're from the internet.
You tell us where you get your protein from, Alan.
Proton energy pills. No, so basically, we've gone through. We're looking at... traditionally, it was... We're looking at, you know, the eating an animal is wrong because of the way the animals were raised and this sort of thing. And it isn't exclusive to just meat. It's, you know, the animal products and the way that they're, you know, brought about, cheese and milk and eggs and things like that. The animals are actually treated just as bad, if not worse, than the animals of which meat comes from, in many cases. So we're looking at it at the moment. We're trying to think, you know, fairly rationally about it and try to decide what is the least destructive way that we can go about eating our food intake. And you know, so far so good. We're you know, getting by on our vegan diet. It's been more difficult going to the shops and finding all the foods and this sort of thing. But generally, it's you know, it's something that we're still looking into. So we don't have all of the arguments down pat at the moment. Mm-hmm. But it's a combination of minimizing harm and suffering. And also there's, you know, the environmental and sociological issues that come from, you know, the production of animal products. So, yeah, basically that's where it is. And so to go around the room on our food consumption.
Uh-huh.
So basically I'm, you know, vegan for the last 2 weeks and that's all great. Dave, where do you sit on food?
I like your shoes, by the way.
Are they leather?
Epic.
They
are. Win. They are.
So they're unethical shoes.
They are. But you see, it's silly for me to throw them out having already bought them.
True.
And this is the point. If I was to buy new shoes...
You've got to make your shoes last until,
For the benefit of listeners...
They won't work anymore.
Dave the Happy Singer's shoes are talking to us.
No. Dave the Happy Singer's toe is wiggling at me.
I got a big hole in my non-leather shoe, which I chose because it had no leather in it.
What's it made of?
Are you sure? Plastic, it's leather.
Oh,
it's made out of... well, it's the Dunlop
it's made out of oil from... blood-soaked oil from Iraq?
I don't think you need to soak it in blood before they...
Theocratic oil from Iran?
No, it's nice oil from Texas.
wait, let me just use the theocratic word again.
Oh, let's talk about animals. I am a vegetarian, sometime vegan. I've been vegan in the past. My basic position is, like, when I'm cooking for myself at home, or I'm going out and I'm buying my own provisions, it tends to be... almost always vegan, occasionally a little bit of cheese, but it's not really kind of a staple anyway. You know, I'd sooner go out and buy hummus and tomatoes than cheese and tomatoes for my sandwiches. But when I'm out and about, if I'm in a pub trying to buy a pub meal, you know, even the potato wedges come with sour cream. You know, you try and buy a sandwich anywhere as a vegetarian, and almost everywhere you go is a choice between cheese or egg. So I'm not, you know, I follow pretty much the same path as you guys, and I've been a vegan before. I'm not quite that dogmatic. It's just for reasons of kind of personal inconsistency. And Richard, have you heard the time when Peter Singer, Peter Singer asked Richard Dawkins? It was a live event. DJ Grothy had interviewed Richard Dawkins live for Point of Inquiry, a fabulous podcast. And at the end, Peter Singer was allowed to ask a question of Richard Dawkins, and it was on this issue of speciesism. You know, shouldn't we take our the principles that we apply to humans and apply them to other species? And of course, Dawkins understands the our relatedness very, very well indeed. And what he said was marvellous. I thought it was a wonderful thing. He says, yes, I totally agree, it's speciesist, and it's just because I eat meat, and it's just because of the way that society's set up. And if there's some way of making a magic wand and having a society that was based around plant-based food, he would turn vegetarian in an instant and would have no problem with it. And I think we need that. And I suppose it's only going to be purchasing power that does this, you know. For me, I'm totally with Alan and Rachel that I will, you know, try and buy ethically as far as I can. But I would like to see better catering for vegans. You know, Newtown in Sydney is fabulous, but, you know, outside Newtown and places like that, it is difficult. Jason, you do eat meat sometimes when you can't get toddlers, right?
Yeah, just when I can't get toddlers. No, constantly, shall we say. I'm a former vegetarian. I was vegetarian for several years, I think probably about 4 years. At the time, I rationalized that as a sort of a, oh, it's less pressure on the world's resources, oh, it's more ethical, oh, blah, 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 blah. But frankly, I was doing it for sex.
Vegetarian girlfriend.
Yes, frankly. So I'm not now. I had my moment of realization on a subway platform, or tube platform technically, in London, where there was a frying bacon sandwich just being made in front of me, and I was in a bad mood, and it was a cold day, and I'd had enough, and I smelled the bacon and went, that's for me. And I went back to it, and it was great, and I haven't really looked back since. I still eat occasionally, you know, vegetarian compatible, but doesn't everyone.
Oh,
absolutely. but yeah, meat is a major part of my diet, and you can tell from my girth, frankly.
So do you say that you don't really think about the issues, or you're concerned with other things?
I tend not to think about it. I suppose if I did think about it, I would probably be more of a person who would buy organic and free range rather than giving it up altogether.
Yeah.
But at the moment, nah, give me a burger. Give me a burger now.
Yeah.
Well, I'm an omnivore, and I understand the arguments that most of the commercial farming of animals is pretty cruel, and so I do go for free range, organic, or whenever I can afford them. But unfortunately, they're really expensive, and I've been really poor, so I've ended up going for the cheaper eggs or the cheaper meat. But I avoid things like hamburgers and things. But yeah, I eat everything, and generally, you may not be able to tell that from my girth, but it seems that my health is better when I'm not vegetarian. I have vegetarian compatible meals as well as you will, Jason.
Well, yeah. Sometimes you can't get any meat, you know.
But generally, I can only do that for a while. I think you need the cultural support. You need good chefs. You need a good range of ingredients so that you can find the mixtures of meals that are good for your health and make you feel good and that you enjoy eating. And I haven't been able to do that. And so at the moment, I'm staying an omnivore.
I think you need, if you to live healthily as a vegan, you need to invest quite a bit of time in just, you know, having to cook for yourself because you can't get it anywhere else. If I could get it in, you know, more accessibly, and I could get it on the move, and I could get it when I'm eating out in a pub or anything, it would be so much more wonderful. Because the truth is, I don't have that time to invest.
You can do it. You can find vegan compatible meals in pubs. You can find vegan compatible cafes around the city. Thing is, you've got to kind of change your lifestyle to fit around what's available, rather than just getting on with it.
See, as vegetarian, we really didn't have any problem in Sydney at all. There's always a vegetarian option on the menu. Like you said, even if it's only just wedges, at least you get something to eat. Whereas with your vegan compatible food, I was lucky enough at the social lounge, which I think is the first time we've been out at a pub at dinner time since our recent change. I was lucky enough to get, you know, a vegan meal, which was just because they were doing pasta there, and, you know, you just a bit of pasta sauce, and it's all good. But there is that element of rationality that needs to be applied. And if you're going to starve, well, eat the goddamn cheese. You know, eat the meat. Eat whatever it is that you have to eat. But seriously.
The thing is as well, look, for the meat eaters, the farming of animals doesn't have to be as cruel as the industry has made it, right? So that could be improved.
It doesn't have to be. It would drive prices up.
Some of it's unnecessary.
Though there
is a certain amount of unnecessary. Every day. We can eat twice, two or three times a week. If you want to be a meat
heretic.
You most mean important
outside. Now.
Most important is that
I'll tell you who's the stronger one of the two.
That people think. Well, I won the feats of strength.
Only because I wasn't there.
It's important that people think about where the food comes from. That interests me actually more than the conclusions that people reach personally. Because I find vegetarianism and veganism harder to defend than atheism. I think it's an open and shut case on the God issue for me. The ethical questions like this is something that we should be spending our time with and not fanning around with us.
If there were synthetic meat, and synthetic, you know, there were substitutes that tasted as good, right, that you couldn't tell from the original. I mean, Jason and I would probably both be happy with that.
I have spaghetti bolognese with textured vegetable protein even now, just because I like the taste.
And I have the tofu hot dogs.
Strange reason.
And pizza, I think
hate it.
I think Dave and I would be the same. Yeah. If you were to grow, you know, blobs of meat in a test tube, that isn't a sentient being, that's just a blob, then I don't think that you'd have any real problem with that.
Yeah. It's been like nearly 10 years since I stopped eating meat, so I don't particularly miss it. There are kind of health arguments that you could make, but I don't think it, you know, the amount I drink, it would be hypocritical of me to claim that I'm vegetarian for health reasons. Peter, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, have instituted an equivalent of something like the X Prize.
They have a prize
for this synthetic lab-grown meat, which was a big debate within their community about whether, like, meat, no, it's wrong, it's because sometimes I think I do like them, and I like their positive kind of
but
but sometimes they don't always follow through on the arguments very well.
Might
they're not
be
always
the
that rational.
The only rational thing I've seen them do, offer a prize for synthetic meat, rather than campaigning about sea kittens. And
the sea kittens thing was ludicrous. But, I mean, they do great stuff like raising awareness about conditions in slaughterhouses and factories.
You just like to look at naked celebrities on adverts, don't you?
Vegan chicks are hot. There is no getting rid of vegan chicks are so sexy.
Did you see the human breast milk ice cream campaign?
I'm so there. There's nothing wrong with human breast milk, and we've evolved more to eat that than we have for cow's milk. Those of us that are fortunate enough to have the genes for lactose tolerance, so why not?
We're the only species that drinks milk outside of infancy. Cow's milk is for baby cows.
Yeah.
Aren't we the only species that drinks the milk of another species as well, though?
Yes.
Well, that's because we're happy
which
mutants.
We feed milk of other species.
Yeah.
We're happy mutants that deliberately, you know, took advantage of the fact that some of us were born with the ability to metabolize milk. And so it got socialized, and evolution meant that most of us now can metabolize milk.
Yeah.
There are still a few people who don't have the genes, but very few of us.
Yeah. So, and what else are you going to eat your cornflakes with, Alan? Come on.
Yeah.
Soy milk.
Ew.
I've always wondered how they get the milk from the soybeans, because they don't have nipples.
Worse than that, because an awful lot of people are allergic to soybeans.
Well, that's true.
And then what are they going to have?
Rice milk.
Have you tried rice milk?
They can have...
It's awful.
Orange juice on their cornflakes.
Bull's milk.
Orange juice on your cornflakes. Did you just say
that's not an odor.
He did. We'll just ignore what Alan said.
Porridge can be made with hot water.
At least now we know what's in. Now we know the other missing component of the protein in Alan's vegan diet.
Yes,
it's like Billy Connolly's question: who was the guy that discovered you could get milk from a cow?
And what did he think he was doing?
Oh dear,
he was very lonely.
Cut.
So, why don't get in touch, guys? If you've got a particular take on this, send us in some emails. We'd like to hear what you'd like to think. Record some audio for us. Talk some nonsense into your computer and send us. What's the email, Alan?
What's the email address? Which you haven't written down. Oh, you have written right down the bottom. Okay.
What's the email address, Ian?
SydneyAtheists@gmail.com or criticalmass@live.com.au.
Yes.
And the thing is, of course, what about, as an example of ethical meat, there are lizards, particularly in Australia, there are lizards that lose their tails and regrow them. The tails just drop off. Sometimes they drop them off to
you have to terrify
predators.
Them. You have to terrify them to get their tails to drop off, and they get stressed, and then you couldn't eat that. No.
I know that.
Well, you just do a little bit of breeding so that the tails just fall off naturally so that they're not distressed.
I mean, it's
not a problem.
It's my opinion that the stress hormones is what makes meat so tasty in the first place.
But that's the whole point of kosher meat, is that you don't stress the animal when you kill them.
Not tasty.
It is. Try it out.
No, not tasty.
Come to Bondi.
Okay, so I find... You know, this whole stuff is pretty new, and I'm, you know, blazing my trail through and trying to figure out exactly where I stand on all these arguments and things. And, you know, I've been sort of looking for the fringe ideas. Okay, what are the boundaries? You know, a clam. Is it all right to eat a clam? Because, you know, clams don't have the sentience.
What about slime molds?
Exactly.
Are they plants or are they animals?
There's a lot of these questions that are on the border, and, you know, who's going to figure this part out, and what are we doing here?
If the plant can move, should you not eat it?
It's a spectrum, isn't it? I mean, I'd draw my line at the animal kingdom, but you could easily make the case that a dairy cow would suffer more in producing milk than a prawn would. And yeah, I don't eat a prawn sandwich.
Prawns don't produce milk, David.
If you're a vegetarian, or if you're trying to be an ethical eater, then where do you draw the line at what sort of organisms you extinguish for your own personal benefit?
Well, I draw my line at the animal kingdom, but I've got a bit of an inconsistency there.
There's several, there at least, because there is no such thing as the animal kingdom.
Well, yeah. Okay, my basic rule is if it's got a face. the problem I've got is that a dairy cow would potentially suffer more in producing milk to make my cheese sandwich than a prawn would suffer in... Off you go again. Prawns don't make milk. I know this, and I'm not claiming they do. Okay? What I'm saying is that a dairy cow would suffer more in making the milk to make my cheese
than a prawn would.
I would eat in the house that Jack built. Then a prawn would suffer in making a prawn sandwich, in being eaten.
So you eat prawns?
So, no, I don't eat prawns.
Oh.
What I'm saying is it's inconsistent of me to not eat prawns on ethical reasons, but to eat a cheese sandwich, because I think a cow, because it's, you know, it's more closely related to us.
Because it has a
very well-developed face, brain, and nerves, and but dead interesting
prawns
stomach.
Prawns have got big, cute eyes.
They have
big eyes, but they're not very cute.
My cat loves eating them.
Cute eyes, and they don't, you know, they can't moo.
So are cats unethical?
I wouldn't eat a cat.
But cats eat meat.
You might have eaten.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever
eaten
rabbit?
On. This is... Oh, come on, Ian. What kind of an argument is it? It's the old argument, but it's not natural. It's not natural. Yeah, well, cats don't drive cars. You know, cats...
You haven't seen that video.
Cats don't form parliaments. You know, there's all kinds of things that we as a species can do, and one of them includes using our reason to overcome our evolutionary heritage. Yeah, it's not natural to use birth control. It's not natural to have a welfare state. It's not.
But I didn't use a not natural argument. I didn't use the word even natural. I just asked an innocent. I asked a question. That's all I asked. So what were you going to say, Jason?
Because ethics is a human thing.
Well, I was going to say, just after Dave said he's never eaten a cat. have you ever eaten rabbit before you became a vegetarian? Because when you skin the cat and remove its head, it looks quite a lot like a skinned rabbit. And I have heard they are often sold as rabbits.
I don't think I ever ate a rabbit or a cat.
You've missed out.
Okay, yep. So the rule is it's unethical to eat...
cute animals.
Cute animals. Or animals with faces, which are the ones that are cute.
Yeah. Look, when it comes down to it, a cat is going to have a bit of difficulty walking down to Woolworths and buying some soy cheese.
We're not the only animals that drink milk. There you go, cats.
Yeah, but we give them the milk.
Yeah, but they can digest it.
Yeah.
Most humans couldn't before we socialized it.
As well.
They can do really fun things with balls of wool, but I...
It's hard to make an ethical argument.
It is.
Are cats allowed to play with wool? What's going on here?
What is the sheep thing?
Yeah, it's sheep abuse, isn't it, really?
What is the sheep... Oh, God.
I think where we were going was there isn't a direct one-to-one mapping between ethics and being animal kingdom. You know, there's a question of consent.
Well,
to be
ethics
raised here,
goes. Ethics does go outside the animal kingdom, and I was going to bring this up when you were talking about your prawns. Now, in you know, the farming of prawns, there is, you know, a whole bunch of other issues, like, you know, the bycatch that they do when they're trawling for the prawns, the way that they destroy the
trawling
of the sea.
For prawns.
Not trawling! No. I'm not trawling! I'm a fisherman, you see? No!
Goodness me.
So when the fishermen are trawling, what are they doing?
Fishermen are not trawling.
Alright.
Remix! Go for it. Come on.
Okay, so there's a lot of other issues that you've got to take into consideration. And when we were talking about this in the pub the other night, Ian said, well, isn't it also unethical to drive to the shop in your car because of all of the ecological issues in, you know, driving your car, burning petrol, running over sheep?
Cats don't drive cars.
Well... if you let your cat drive the car, it's probably a lot less ethical than if you drive yourself.
I agree with that.
Mm. So what I was saying before, I'm more interested in the fringes.
How much did you guys drink before the show?
This is brilliant. This is the best one since the one I hosted.
It would have to be a group of cats to drive a car. Because you have this issue of different controls.
Bill Bailey covered this. How would a worm drive a car, you say? Easy. Two on the pedals, two on the wheel, one on the A to Z. It could happen.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm a lot more interested in the fringe stuff. So let's get straight into Armin Mutes, the German cannibal that consensually ate another man.
Sooner or later, it always reaches cannibalism.
Now,
okay. Mavis.
But hold on, before, because this goes...
I mean Mavis.
This goes on to the whole Douglas Adams thing, if you breed an animal that, you know, wants to be eaten and can tell you so.
That's a beautiful scene.
Isn't that ethical?
He's brilliant. Douglas Adams, rest in pieces.
Well, I don't see really any problem, but it's a lot easier to talk about when it's actually happened between humans.
Ah, but humans haven't been specially bred to want to die.
This dude gave his consent.
At what point did he give his consent, and at what point did he stop having the ability to withdraw his consent?
At the point where he lopped his own penis off and cooked it, I think it was pretty clear.
That was, I think, the point of no return was when Herr Mivas said, "So,
do you want to come back to my place and have some dinner?
Can I cut your willy off?" I think that was the moment when he could have said, no.
That would be the appropriate answer.
That was the bit
for the negative form.
No, Run Lola Run's on telly tonight. I'm just going to go home. Bye.
So basically, the way that the Mavis case worked is he put out an advert saying, I'd like to cook you. And somebody responded. And they said...
This was covered on the IT Crowd, of course.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, the bare bones, the guy comes over, he says, yeah,
but he wasn't trolling.
He said bare bones.
Oh, dear.
Bad choice of words.
Oh, come on. Oh, this is so topical as well. I love this. This is how many...
This was some time ago.
No, it was some time ago, but we're not talking about brand new things here.
Okay.
It was found in a court of law that he had committed murder. It was taken from manslaughter to murder, but they basically said that the guy that consented couldn't actually have consent because then that would make him mentally ill. And then he would have diminished responsibility, and then he wouldn't have the ability to consent.
Because you'd have to be crazy to want someone to kill you and eat you for no other reason than that's what you now want to do. Exactly.
I think that's an unnecessarily broad judgment.
Yes.
That's what they judged, though.
Prove it.
That's what they judged, right? I'm just paraphrasing. That's what their judgment was.
That was the judgment, and I'm of the opinion that the judgment was wrong, and that there isn't really an ethical problem with the eating of a person if it's consent.
But as I say, once he's gone home with this guy, he no longer really, once he's in this guy's power, he no longer has the ability to say, actually, I changed my mind. There's no last minute changing of mind here once you've agreed.
Well, that's an assumption.
No, I'm saying he's powerless. If he does say, whoops, I changed my mind, it's too late once you're locked in the guy's house and he's got the cleaver.
Oh, I think Armin would have let him out. Yeah, of course he would have.
It's not like he was a serial killing horrible person. I don't really know the background to it.
Sometimes you meet that special person. You know, you meet this just seems perfect for you in every way. You know, just everything just seems to tick every single box.
And they're so tender to
let
you.
Let them go. Oh, lordy.
So do you guys have a problem with him eating the other guy?
Frankly, no.
No?
No problem whatsoever.
On a whim.
That's the really, really short response, isn't it?
I think we should protect the mentally ill.
Yeah.
And I'm concerned I'm concerned that it would be very, very difficult to make the case that somebody could consent to this without some kind of mental problem.
I can envisage a framework that we could put in place to enable this consent. We could have forms. We could have
none of which is in place, of course.
We could have a questionnaire.
We could have a questionnaire. In fact,
psychological evaluation
questionnaire. I can see signature them
doing it in Switzerland. They could maybe match up kind of the euthanasia, voluntary euthanasia people with the cannibals.
Oh, that would just be yes.
Will you donate organs? Are you prepared to donate your organs? You know, disabled people. Yes. Are you prepared to be eaten by somebody who gets turned on by it? Yes.
We must implement this.
Would you like
to
give your body to science? I mean,
why is it that you only ever get the choice to give your body to science? Why can't you give your culinary art?
Well, see, one of the differences.
We're making progress here, guys. We're solving the problems.
One of the problems is that if you give your body to science, the usual agreement is it's after you've died, and not that you're killed to give your body to science. That's the usual agreement.
But why is it a problem for you to kill yourself for science? I don't get it. I'm not going to do it.
Well, there's the whole argument, basically, of whether or not suicide is a mental... is a mental
suicide
dysfunction.
Suicide is painless. Brings on many changes.
And you can take or leave it if you choose.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to 70s Hour. That was the theme from MASH. Wonderful. This has been a staple of science fiction, hasn't it? Stuff like
Silent Green.
Serve Man was it the Twilight Zone?
Damon Knight.
Almost certainly
wrote the story first. Time. Yeah.
And then Silent Green, of course.
Yes. Make Room by Harry Harrison.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have to face this in the future. Science fiction told us this, and they tend to be right eventually.
And I mean, this is it could be the solution to our overpopulation problem. We could just be eating people.
We could do. Jonathan Swift said that, didn't he?
The modest proposal. The Irish could ease their suffering by eating their children.
Yeah,
there is nothing logically wrong with the actual modest proposal as it stands.
That's the problem with using logic alone.
This is the thing. This is exactly right.
That's why the ontological argument's crap.
Okay, so I think a more topical story on the other side that I feel is wrong. In Tanzania, there's been these spiritual healers that use albinos in their medicines. Now, the bodies of a person with albinism is meant to carry spiritual properties, and, you know, it happens in a lot of these kind of second, third world countries. And it says here that they use their limbs, hair, skin, and genitals for various treatments. And they're actually going around and seeking out albinos and killing them and, you know, turning them into their alternative medicine, whatever it is. Now, that I have a huge problem with. That's not right.
Really? You think you think serial killing is wrong?
Why? Why do you think that's wrong, Alan?
Well, okay, the cannibal thing's right because of the guy is consenting.
He's not consenting, he's mentally ill. I'm sorry, that's really, really clear. That's why we have all sorts of things about suicide prevention in our society. We don't just accept, go off, nip off and kill yourself because it's a rational thing to do.
Wait a second, so if that's right, then how can you consent to euthanize yourself?
You can't, that's why there's a debate.
Wow.
How can you say that?
That's why there's a controversy.
That's clever.
This is a controversy. It's a philosophical and political controversy that doesn't have a simple answer because it isn't just logical. I've had long discussions with people at Philorum Philosophy on this, and very rational, logical people can come to different conclusions and still discuss it long into the night. You have the whole problem of whether suicide is a rational decision for anyone under any circumstances. And the usual arguments for suicide aren't rational arguments most of the time. They're very special cases. They're the special cases about pain. They're usually painful suicides. Most of the times when you say, look, only crazy people want to kill themselves, they say, oh, no. Look, if you're in massive amounts of pain, then naturally you want the release from that pain of suicide. I'll say, no, I want pain relief. Thank you very much. And to continue living.
Yeah, if you're conflating, nice.
Exactly, you're conflating artificially the cessation of pain and the cessation of life, when in fact they're two separate things. and it's an artificial bringing together. The person who's on their deathbed, they say, oh, yeah, but what if you're dying of a horrible disease, you've only got 2 weeks left to live, and you're in horrible pain, then it's all right to kill yourself. Because after all, you've only got two more weeks to live, and you want to escape the pain. It's like, no, if I gave you a cure for your pain, you'd feel better and you wouldn't want to die. You'd like to enjoy those 2 weeks. And if I could make some, if some breakthrough would happen in the next 2 weeks, unless you live a bit longer, you'd like that too most of the time. They want to escape the pain or the suffering, not the life.
Coming up next on 70s Hour, How Do You Mend a Broken Heart by the Bee Gees?
So, it's mistaken thinking.
Alan and Dave.
I don't think that...
I think we're in the presence of someone who hasn't been in the pub.
Yes. You go to the pub to have philosophical discussions. You're doing it wrong! Oh, yeah, so, yeah, anyway, we shouldn't eat albinos for alternative medicine.
What's wrong with
anybody disagree?
Unless they consent.
Oh, you just throw in a loophole. It's
yes.
Like, yeah.
Yes, frankly, I am.
Which so far none of them have.
That
apparently
we know of.
Not. No.
All right. So serial killing bad. What about rape, Jason?
Rape bad. Rape very bad. To continue on my ongoing series.
What if you consent
on rape and religion? What if you shout surprise first? I mean, honestly.
Oh, dear me. Jason, putting the sensual in the non-consensual.
So, yes, slightly lighter story than the last one this time. Although still fairly, you know, serious business and all that. There's a Muslim cleric in Melbourne called Samir Abu Hamza, who you may or may not have heard of. He did a lecture in 2003, which was posted on the internet, in which he told his followers that under Islamic law, men could demand sex from their wives and beat them if they needed to. I actually did spend the time to go and look through this video, and yeah, he pretty much does say that, and he pretty much does justify his beliefs based on Islamic law, Sharia. So, a quote from Abu Hamza himself. If the husband was to ask for a sexual relationship and she is preparing the bread on the stove, she must leave it and come to respond to her husband. She must respond!
Who prepares bread on the stove?
Cooking, you're doing it wrong. You are doing it wrong. So
in the oven or in the toaster? Not on the stove!
Could be
not
flat
on the stove,
bread.
Abu Hamza! You're wrong!
Doing it completely wrong. So anyway, this
is someone who doesn't cook.
This was a controversy that came out in the news recently, and Kevin Rudd, our glorious leader, roundly condemned Abu Hamza's statements, to which Abu Hamza came back and said, oh, no, I was just being metaphorical.
Metaphorical beating of the wife.
I don't think you were being metaphorical at all. I've seen the video. Sorry, dude. No way. So, what have you to say on Islamic rape this week?
Well, it's probably just as bad as Hindu rape, really.
In a different way.
This is marital rape.
Is it possible, in fact, to rape your wife?
Well, I'm not married.
Imagine you were married for a moment, and your lovely wife, who, you know, I don't even know her. She must be lovely, though.
She's splendid. I'm with you so far.
She doesn't want to give you one.
She doesn't.
She's in a bit of a mood. Okay. You were out drinking till too late last week, and she's in a bit of a mood with you, and she doesn't want to shag you.
Yes, okay.
But you want one.
Right, I'm with you so far.
So you're going to bloody well have one.
Am I?
Well, according to Abu Hamza, you're going to bloody well have one.
Ah.
You're going to force it on her, and frankly, he thinks that's okay. He thinks it's impossible.
Because that's the contract.
For marital rape to happen.
Well, why is his lust uncontrollable?
This is a question that must
but that,
be addressed.
But that's not the question he's asking. I mean, the way they're posing this, they're framing it as if the contract of marriage is such that you'll give each other sex on demand. That's the relationship, that's the agreement you've entered into. And then if she says no, well, then of course you're fulfilling the contract. And I think that's basically what he's saying, which is why you might have a problem with it.
I've got a bit of a problem with it, Ian. Yeah, I've got to say that on the whole, I think he's full of crap. And it's the problem is, right, we've got this kind of stuff needs to be reformed urgently. It's barbaric, it's medieval, and Christianity, by and large, has done it. Moderate Christianity has done it. We've dragged them kicking and screaming into common sense.
For the most part.
But
most of it's happened in the last 30, 40 years.
Well, this is just lunacy. This is.
So do we know the passage of Sharia law that it's based upon? Like, is this just a guy taking things out of context and saying something stupid? Or is this something that is covered by their religion?
It is an interpretation.
Religions don't do that, do they?
He's been roundly condemned by the Islamic Council of Victoria, who's also said, no, the Quran doesn't say that. So, myself, not having read the Quran in the original Arabic, will not venture to offer an opinion on whether the Quran actually does condone it. However, this is a cleric, and his job is meant to be to interpret the book for his followers, and he's telling his followers it's okay to rape their wives. So!
This goes back to what Dave was saying. This is what Christians used to have up until the mid-20th century. I mean, this is used to be, if you go back to the 19th century, this is what most of the Christian world accepted as normal. A man was king in his home, and he had total rights to build his wife around as he saw fit. And rape within marriage was inconceivable because she'd consented by marrying to have sex whenever he wanted it. And it was pretty much the same sort of rationale that this cleric is using, the Christians used to use before they got better.
Okay, but if we live in a multicultural society, and it's an if, okay, to what extent does our secular society have the right to step into Islamic-style society and say, hang on a minute, raping your wife isn't how we roll here?
That's an excellent question.
Because there is this thing about multicultural which has been popular for decades, and I think it's a little bit of a myth.
No, I like multiculturalism, except human rights transcend multiculturalism. Mm. And this is a key thing, is that the human rights are above everything else. Do whatever little rituals or diet or customs, whatever you like, but any individual... You can't say, well, our custom says we can do things without people's consent and expect us to respect that. The human rights, the whole consent thing's over that. So if you don't consent to being raped, you don't consent to being killed, you don't consent to doing whatever it is, you should have a right in our, if you're in within our society that we have a little bit of say over, then no, human rights trump custom every time.
Is that only human rights, or is it fair to say no, Australian law trumps Islamic customs?
If Australian law supports human rights, then yes.
But only in the case of human rights?
Well, what other things should they not be allowed to do or be allowed to do under Australian law other than human rights things? What, can you give me an example?
Well, yeah, so something like, say, the use of Sharia law to solve disputes.
The principle that perhaps a daughter is only entitled to half the amount that a son is entitled to in a will settlement, for instance.
Ah, inheritance.
Should that be allowed to trump the Australian law on the subject?
Wouldn't the Australian law be that the person with the inheritance is coming from decides how it gets divided?
Yeah, we don't have any of those arbitrary...
That would be fine, but yeah. You'd hope that there'd be some sort of principle of equality to be applied.
I thought that there's not the principle of equality. I thought basically you can decide in your will to be totally unequal, and that's just how it is.
Yeah. Okay, so
I'm not referring to where the will already exists, and wouldn't it's
gotcha.
There's an actual term for it, and I can't remember what
intestate?
It is. Intestate, that's the one.
So you're talking about an intestate settlement. Mm-hmm. See, this is to do with sovereignty as well, and it gets sort of to rights. With sovereignty, the problem is that Australian law pretty much always, any sovereign government will assert that its laws trump anybody's culture, pretty much. They've tried to be a little bit flexible with Aboriginal culture where it really hasn't gone very well because they've abused Australian law in addressing it to Aboriginals. But generally, the government's laws always trump the culture's laws. That's because the governments have the guns and the jails. So
in Britain, where the Sharia law was decided that they were going to be able to choose between legal systems,
mm-hmm.
would it be okay in this case where, you know, a woman has sex forced upon her and then is, through her culture, somewhat coerced into going through the Sharia system where she doesn't have the right? Is this something that we should be contesting?
This is absolutely. Why... This is why human rights are not something you can choose to give up. Like, you can't sell your human rights, you can't trade them in, because if human rights were something you could choose between, then you could be coerced and you would just automatically lose them to anyone with more power than you. Mm. And so that's why human rights have to be at the top. And of course, unfortunately in Australia, we don't have very strict protection of basic human rights.
Oh, there's no formal bill of...
There is no formal Bill of Rights, and the closest we have to any of that is not respected. Like in the Constitution, our establishment clause that says that the government shall not establish a religion, which in the US says absolutely separation church and state. You can't bring your religion into Parliament or into Congress or into state schools, and here they bring it into the Senate, into Parliament and into state schools. They just ignore that clause altogether. In fact, I haven't seen anything ever that's taken that clause of the Constitution into account.
No, I believe at the moment there's a sort of a nascent grassroots campaign going on for a Bill of Rights in Australia.
Mm. Yes, Amnesty's part of that.
Yeah, I didn't prepare for this because I didn't know we'd get to this point in the conversation.
I'm sure you'll find the Socialist Alliance and the Raelians are definitely on board.
Oh,
as well.
They'll be on board. Oh, yes, will they ever be on board?
Well, what's the,
selling magazines.
The Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission? They're the Freedom from Religion, or is it Freedom of Religion?
The Freedom from Religion Foundation that you're talking about in the US?
No. There's the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission have a thing out at the moment that you can put in submissions for. I'm pretty sure it's a Freedom from Religion document. And basically, I know that Sydney Atheists are putting in a submission for it. We're drafting one up for it. And I'm not exactly sure how that's going to play into things, but they're basically a body that's looking to promote things that are, you know, along human rights.
Mm.
And they're looking at the intersection of your religion and human rights and how we're going to bring that about in Australia. So everybody's, you know, putting in their bits and pieces for it. But I don't know if that's going to trump law or...
the idea is for it to become law, right? There've been attempts to put human rights into the Australian Constitution in the past, and the governments have always foxed them by stopping them. They usually get a big, long list of things, and they reduce them down to one, and then they add a baby-killing clause, and everyone votes against it. And so revisions of the Australian Constitution almost never pass because they always rewrite them in a bad way and then add a clause that nobody will ever vote for. And so I think the last thing we ever got changed in our Constitution was when Aboriginals got given the right to vote because they were recognised as being counted in the census back in 1972. And we haven't had a change to the Constitution since.
Okay, so where we stand at the moment is, it was wrong of him to say it, the actual act itself is wrong, we shouldn't be respecting the culture of the Sharia law. Is it against the law for him to say what he said?
No, it's not against the law for him to say what he
said. Well, he's inciting violence.
He's so inciting violence.
This is true.
I think we... Well, I don't know.
This
I think,
is going to roll right
is
over
it
my
violence
free speech
if it's your wife?
Thing, isn't it?
Sorry? What were you going to say?
This is going to roll right over my ideas about free speech, isn't it?
Well, you've got free speech, totally. But you've also totally. Got the responsibility to, you know...
To shut the hell up.
I've tended to work on the principle that you can say whatever you like, but I can call you an asshole for saying it. This may... be a little worse.
But this,
I'm not sure.
His use of speech here risks
it
causing
does,
women to be raped and beaten.
It does risk genuine harm, yes.
When it comes to free
speech. So should he be allowed to say it, Dave?
You're really putting me on the spot here.
Oh, yeah.
Because I really...
You are wearing a shirt that says, I support free speech.
I'm wearing
a... NoCensorship.info.
Yeah.
Of course I'm going to ask you that. Because I have an answer, but I want to hear yours.
Right, okay. I'm saying we shouldn't be restricting his freedom of speech. He should be allowed to say that. Because as soon as you start restricting it, you get into terrible questions about what is allowed and what isn't allowed and who's deciding what's allowed and how do we police those who are policing what's allowed and how do we police the policers of the police. And it all gets into this terrible, nasty vipers. What should be happening is as soon as he says that, his whole community should be saying, no! No, you loony! Go and see a doctor! We shouldn't be raping our wives! That's just...
And this is the part where I think... Okay, there should be individual free speech.
Hmm.
You know, people that represent only themselves can say whatever they want. Now, a person that's up on the dais in front of everybody, telling them what to think, and who whose minds are enslaved to whatever he says, really need to say responsible things. And
no.
Somebody needs to be looking out.
No, no, no. I'm sorry. You don't give up your freedom of speech just because some people pay attention to what you say. Right? Sorry, but that's having some rights for some people. The fact is, as Dave was exactly right, when he says this in public, one, he's giving away that he's a loony to his community and to all of us. He gives an opportunity for people to reply to him, which we wouldn't have had if he only said this in private. If he had little private meetings with all his fellow worshippers and said, this is what I really think, and this is what it really says in the Quran, then we wouldn't know, and his community couldn't speak out against him, as they have. We couldn't speak out against him, and we wouldn't have this conversation right now if he didn't have his freedom to say what he wanted to say and reveal himself as a loony. The idea is that there's a market of ideas out there, there's intelligent people, and we get to point out where the errors are in his thinking, which we don't get to do if he loses his right to speak. Because if he loses his right to speak, so do we. We're not allowed to say anything about him because we're not being culturally sensitive. We might represent people as well. People might listen to us because we're on the podcast. Therefore, we lose our right to speak. That doesn't sound reasonable.
No, we just have to say things that are responsible.
And what does that mean?
Well, it means... Well, this is where it comes out of the thought experiment and into the real world, and it gets messy. But...
Who decides what's responsible? I mean...
Well, that's what I'm saying.
He's a leader in his community. He's decided what's responsible. And by his lights, he's right.
Okay, so who are we to say he's wrong, then?
We're not saying... I'm saying he's perfectly right to say what he said.
I'm Dave the Happy Singer, and I say he's wrong.
But he's wrong in what he said is wrong.
Because the rights of
the
women not to be raped and beaten.
I am Jason Brown, and I disapprove of his message.
Exactly, exactly. I think we all disapprove of his message.
So should he... You're saying it... What he said was wrong, but he should have been allowed to say it.
Exactly. It's which is what Voltaire said. I mean, this is not a new topic, right? This has come up over the last couple of hundred years. Voltaire, I disagree with everything you say, but I'll fight to death for your right to say it, because it makes a difference. When we live in a society where we can disagree and argue and hash things out and work out what is best and what's not, then we can get all these... This is how we got to the position where... The man is no longer the king of his own castle and allowed to beat his wife, which was Australian, British, European Christian society, right? Behind closed doors, do what you like. We've gone away from that to where women do have the right to consent or not consent and not be beaten up as the norm because of people's ability to speak out and say that's wrong. It's all freedom of speech is what let it happen.
NoCensorship.info. Yeah, of course, you say all that, Ian, but, you know, from the Australian government's point of view, that must mean you approve of child pornography.
Obviously.
Obviously.
Won't somebody think of the children?
The children are not accessing child porn, and if anyone should be allowed to look at it, surely it's the children.
Oh, Stephen Conroy never stopped thinking about the children.
Well, there was a thing only last week about a 16-year-old child getting arrested for having child porn, and he had photos of himself.
Yeah,
on his phone.
And it's got worse than that. In the US, there are girls who've been convicted. Like, this is a law to protect the children, and the children are being convicted and punished for breaking the law to protect themselves for naked pictures of themselves. What?
Look, I've got no problem with getting children off the street, okay? Just get them in the jails as fast as possible. Get them away from me.
You were a child once.
Yes. Yes, I was, and I was a little bastard.
You surprised me. Oh, it's great. It's just been wonderful. And of course, like, the ethics and philosophy and everything we've had. We've had the penis pantry over there.
Brilliant. We've now, of course, also got freedom of speech. What are the restrictions on freedom of speech? Well, of course, one of the restrictions on freedom of speech in America, which has freedom of speech guaranteed in its constitution, unlike here, is copyright. And so the Scientologists are in the news about copyright violation of Fox Studios' Simpsons copyright. Shall we play the clip or discuss it first?
Play the clip so that people have got context.
Yeah. Right, here's the clip.
Hey, what's happening, man? This is Bart Simpson. Just kidding. Don't hang up. This is Nancy Cartwright. And this is a very special phone call to you. I'm now auditing on new OT7 and have been asked to speak at the Flag World Tour event on January 31st in the Grand Ballroom at the Hollywood and Highland Center at 6:30 p.m. It's going to be a blast, man. I will be there to share my many wins as a Solonauts auditor and to see the Golden Era film presentation of Flag, the mecca of technical perfection. I hope you can make it, man. To confirm for the Flag event, please call us back at 888-841-7131. That's 888-841-7131. See you there, man.
Did everybody get the number? So, that was voice of Bart Simpson and Nancy Cartwright spruiking an event for the Church of Scientology. Sorry, the Cult of Scientology. Sorry, the Church of Scientology. But using the Bart Simpson shtick, which unfortunately is owned by Fox.
Without permission.
And she used it very much without permission.
And Fox had a cow, man.
They did. They haven't told her to eat her shorts yet, though.
No. Not if they're told her to seek employment elsewhere.
Not yet. But we can be hopeful, can we not?
Yes. But, I mean, there can't be anybody else in the world who can do an impression of Bart Simpson after 20 years now, can they?
Well, not me, if you're looking at me like that, no. Frankly.
I can't do the laugh. I can't do the voice. I can't do any of it. But there are people out there who can do it. She's the highest contributor to Scientology. Is she not?
She donated last year. $10 million US dollars in January last year.
Tom Cruise only gave about $5 million, was it?
More than John. More than anyone. More than
Isaac, but he did die. I'll cut that bit.
Okay.
So she's done this. She's broken copyright. How do we feel about this?
I think, in addition to her breaking copyright, she's broken her contract, which stipulates that she cannot use that without explicit permission from the producers of the show, which she's done. I think this was meant to be a private communication among Scientologists. It was a robocall.
They never learned.
It was a robocall as featured in The Simpsons.
Yes, the irony.
Scientologists know what the internet can do.
They haven't figured it out yet.
They don't learn. They don't learn because they're using Hubbard tech against it.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
So what should happen to her?
You're going to do something like, surely she should be allowed to use this because copyright is all bad.
What about her freedom of speech?
What about her freedom of speech?
She should be roundly laughed at.
I think this is, in fact,
she is being.
Her whole community should say, "No, you loony!" I think this is a contractual thing between Fox. It's up to Fox to decide what they want to do. I've got almost as much disdain for Fox as I have for the Cult of Scientology.
But isn't it nice to see the two of them together there? Oh, in dispute. Isn't it lovely?
It's almost as good as when the Sydney Anglican Heretics and Mike Padgett.
Oh, wonderful.
On the blogs. Oh!
But having said that, I do think it's great to see Scientology in the news. It's great to hear people hearing the crazy stuff that's going on over there at Flag.
And of course,
and gold.
There's a picture on the YouTube clip that came with the audio of someone with a V for Vendetta mask over Homer's face,
yeah,
strangling Bart.
The
that's not a mask, that's his real face.
Oh. Yeah, the anonymous V for Vendetta guy, Fawkes mask. Yeah, Tom Cruise signed one of those.
Oh, that was...
He was
best it's a Scientologist could sell
on
them.
YouTube ever. If you haven't seen the clip on YouTube of Tom signing the mask...
Better than Boxy?
Better than Boxy. Even better than Boxy. Tom Cruise at the premiere for Valkyrie, walking past the crowd, someone reaches out of the crowd and hands over the V for Vendetta mask, which, of course, symbolizes the anonymous protest against Scientology. And as we all know, Tom is probably the most prominent spokesperson for the entire cult. I mean church. So, this mask comes out of the crowd while he's signing autographs. And a bouncer comes and grabs it away, runs off with it. And you can hear the guy that owns the mask going, please, can I have my mask back? Please, Tom, please sign my mask. We love you, Tom, we love you. And Tom goes up to the bouncer, takes the mask back, signs it with a little peace symbol, and hands it back. And I actually don't know what this says about Tom. I don't know.
He's surrounded by books.
Has he given up? Do they want peace? Do they really want peace? Is he just taking the piss? I don't know.
I don't know. Like an OT. What is he?
He's OT7.
Yeah. So he's transcendental. You know, he can
operate independently off his own body.
Yeah. So obviously, he's out of his
when
mind.
When he drives past a road accident, he's the only person who can help.
Only person who can
but
help.
But he doesn't.
Ah! Yes.
See, where are all these great deeds being done by Scientologists with their superpowers?
Oh, they're all over the place.
We just don't hear about them.
Hurricane Katrina?
Touch assists at 9/11.
You heard of Sodom and Gomorrah?
They did the Sodom.
That's what happened. That's what happened the last time people messed.
They did the Sodom.
Oh, lovely.
Should we go on to upcoming events?
Yes.
Okay, I'll see if I can decode this into an actual chronological order, because it's not written that way. So, Peter Singer, February 4th, The Life You Can Save. And he's going to be at some event organised by Glee Books somewhere.
Yes, that's right. You can find out more through Glee Books. I think on our meetup site are details of how to get your tickets.
There. By the time this podcast is released, the event will have finished.
This is true. All right.
So we had a wonderful time.
Depends.
We had a really good time at Peter Singer.
There's talk of a February meetup on ethics and Peter Singer on February 8th. Then February 11th, What Should I Believe? I don't know where any of these are, but this
again,
is what's written
I think
here.
That one is organized through Glee Books. Is that Dorothy Rowe?
Doesn't say.
Well, there you go.
Just a brief note.
Pretty
what
sure
should
it
I
is.
Believe? So Glee Books, What Should I Believe, February 11th. Look on the Glee Books webpage. But no, sydneyatheist.org will have all this stuff
yes.
up there. There's a book club coming up for February 17th on Julia Sweeney's Letting Go of God.
What? Yeah.
Julia Sweeney.
No. Julia Sweeney?
I'll believe that when I see it.
I'll see. No.
It's a book. It's already out.
No.
Oh, dear. Julia Sweeney is now a meme.
In jokes.
And there's the Atheists Social Lounge on February 26th.
Terrific, come along.
And there's... I can't read the name. Tim Minchin.
Tim Minchin,
March 30th.
At Tim Minchin.
Yes. And Tim Minchin, what's he doing? Who is he?
He's a stand-up comedian.
He's a
musical comedian.
A musical stand-up comedian who plays... Brilliant piano, looks outlandish, and uses themes of skepticism and atheism in his comedy.
Where will
that
he be
sounds
performing?
Very familiar.
So, do we
know who does that?
Do we know the location of which he will be performing?
I have tickets. However, I did not buy them myself, so I don't know where.
Probably details at
sydneyatheist.org.
I think it's at the Enmore Theatre, and it will sell out fast. It may even be sold out by now.
But if it has sold out and you want some... outlandish comedy music from an atheist.
We have no idea where you go.
DaveTheHappySinger.com.
Have you got any upcoming gigs, Dave?
Yes, I am. I'll be playing at the March in March in Canberra.
What is March in March, Dave?
March in March is the big national protest against this ludicrous plan to filter the internet and stop our freedom of speech, which recently included a political site.
It did include a political site.
An anti-abortion site. This was, from the outset, this was a despicable site. It was loathsome and vile, but it was filtered and it was a political site rather than a child pornographic site. Or any of this other stuff that they've been saying. So, yeah, that was added to the ACMA blacklist. ACMA are the watchdog that are overseeing
the Australian Communications and Media Authority.
They added this site, which would definitely political speech. And we've seen this before. In the So, March in March,
Find out more about the Sydney Atheist at sydneyatheist.org. So you can find links to our meetup group, blog, and photos, and links to the contact us at sydneyatheist.com or criticalmass@yahoo.com.au. See you next time. And as Alan likes to say, stay good without God.
Okay, guys, stay happy.
So, I had a lot of replies from, like, my videos. Or not a lot, I guess. That's a little...